Of a man's first disobedience, there is much to be said. But before we start, perhaps some background on the pipes themselves. Shakespeare called them the woolen pipes. Others called them union pipes. The illan, or the elbow pipes. Nero played them as Rome burned. Marie Antoinette took lessons. They made Che Guevara cry. And from when I was a cub, I loved the look of them, the sense of them, the mechanics of them, and the flawless poetry of their design. And above all, I adored the delicate noises they produced. All my life I had heard their music in the very wind, in the sally bushes, and on the old 78s of Willie Clancy and Felix Doran, music they played 24 hours a day on Athlone. I heard it also on long players, on reel-to-reels, and most especially on bootleg tapes purchased for my own exclusive pleasure at the Mart. And what I listened to the most were recordings made by the greatest piper of them all, the Ace and Deuce, the man they called Liam Oag. Young Willie Flynn, at whose feet I sat and wept. Oh, those were innocent days, right enough. Simple days, wholesome days, before the sky filled up with dark rolling clouds of muddy carnal concupiscence, and I hit with such a clatter the precipitous rocks of desire and got sucked down deep into Augustinian whirlpools of vice.
In the 1980s, I sounded more like this. Oh, I was a younger man then, all right. Fresh-faced, innocent, and my tongue was incorrupt. School choir, Boy Scouts, Pioneer, and Total Abstinence Association. The whole shebang.
And then, the usual. I entered of my own volition a place called Maguire's. Maguire's Gin Palace and Liquor Saloon, on the main street. Well, you can guess the rest of it. My first ever order is put in with as much authority as I can manage. I seat myself in the corner, and 10 jittery minutes later, Cosmos, the minuscule barman, sets 3 trays of Guinness before me, their heads a flower field of creamy shamrocks and smiling faces.
There you are. That's the start of it now.
And then Cosmos, the minuscule barman, backs away, kicks a crate across the floor, climbs aboard it, straightens himself up, hooks his thumbs in his waistcoat pockets, and, like a statue of Bonaparte on his pedestal, awaits my next move. Years of experience in the drinks trade has taught him that this, for his young customer, is a big event.
In your own time, son, in your own time.
A dozen monumental pints. When I think of it now, the shamrocks and the smiles already sinking, dissolving like spectres in the cream, as, with great ceremony, I begin to lower them into me one by one. The first one tastes like an iron bar, or maybe a bicycle wheel. The second tastes like a horse's hoof covered in sugar, or a Vida loaf. By the time I have downed the fourth or fifth, although still on my stool, my attempts to pinpoint the taste is neither here nor there, and I'm tilting hard in a westerly direction. Before long, I'm breathing so hard through my nostrils that Cosmos, the minuscule barman, still on his plinth, makes his first intervention.
Are you all right there?
No problemo. I've never felt better in my life.
Maybe you might consider easing up a bit.
Who owns that dog?
There's no dog in here, son. Just you and me and that old fellow over by the fire with the cap on him and the stick and the roll of notes.
Stop walking.
But there is a dog. I can hear the dog. And yet there's no dog in the place and no old fella either. with a cap on him and a stick. And with thoughts of Liam O'Flynn playing something slow like Sean O'Dwyer a Glana, I pass over into a deep slumber from which I cannot be awoken for some hours. Cosmos leaves me to it. He has read the Bildungsroman of every teenager in town, and chapter 2 of mine, he assumes, will be the same as that of everyone else. And, sure enough, sometime close to closing, with me lurching over the urinal, swaying in my own Mistral, trying to read the racing pages pinned aloft before me, what lands in only a woman in bright yellow waterproofs? Large-boned and luscious, she is clearly identifiable as a tourist, and, bold as brass, she commences an angular conversation in a somewhat mysterious tone, one which causes electrical waves in all the predictable locations.
My yellow Wellington boots, you like them?
They're the cat's pyjamas.
You are local fishermen, yes? I have the fascination for the Irish fishermen.
Mrs., no harm to you, but this is the men's jacks.
I know this. I'm following you here for the pleasure of it. When I look at you, you are giving me the goosebumps. I'm thinking, you would like to see my cruiser boat, yes?
My levees were breached with ease. And there on her cruiser boat, I was rendered unzipped entirely as I partook, for the first time, in the dangerous twin ceremonies of tequila slamming and sexual acrobatics. Before long, I was as full as 40 badgers, and I was telling her all about Liam O'Flynn and insisting that she listen to my new cassette, O'Flynn playing on a set of reels, The Woman I Never Forgot, The Pullet, and The Lady's Pantalettes. Oh, God, when I think of it, I was awake most of the night, the grey monastic waters of the Erne gently lapping against the sides of the cruiser, which, in its turn, creaked against the ragged half-tires nailed to the jetty by the biggest nails in Fermanagh. The boat fairly rocked, and waves, then bigger waves, and yet bigger waves again, went all the way to the salt sea at Bundoran, and out and out and out into the broad Atlantic Ocean, to swirl and crash and rise and heave and roll and break and spume and spray the skirts of the Statue of Liberty herself and the next parish of Battery Park. Little did I know. Sated. Desiccated, seasick, a beautiful, still, glass-calm Fermanagh morning, the winding banks, my watery home. There's a big black dog tied to a sally tree, and there's me talking German to myself and lilting three tunes, The Woman I Never Forgot, The Pullet, and The Lady's Pantalettes. It's when Planxty play at the Technical College that I see in the flesh, for the very first time, Liam O'Flynn himself strapping on the elbow pipes. The godlike O'Flynn, one elbow pressuring the bag, the other squeezing the bellows, the fingers quivering and rolling, the heel of the hand vamping on regulators, the wrist being brought to bear on the baritone and tenor keys, and him whipping the chanter up off his leg for the bottom D. Complex, intricate, controlled, beautiful. And yet, above all of this magical lap-level activity, the face of O'Flynn remains impassive, as if carved from marble. His back straight, he is a vision of nobility and goodness. And from that very moment, he begins to cram and pop and charm me with those Ennis ghost D's. I know that my life as I have known it is over.
Oh.
The next day was to be my last at St. Oscar's, a single-sex institution full of single boys encouraged to play shirtless Gaelic football during hailstorms. I couldn't get Liam O'Flynn out of my head. And the moment the Reverend Father Mert Monaghan started handing out copies of the latest issue of Reality, a Redemptorist publication with an outrageous misnomer, I just got up and left. No more, says I to myself. Non serviam. And, abandoning all, I lit out and fled the Erne County so that my adventures might get underway in style. And now, as senior altar boy at the altar of Bacchus, I am more than keen to lose myself completely, to embrace the world and strike out into the shadowy jungles of sin. And so into the undergrowth I go with just my little machete in my hand. Ah, now, the mistakes you make in life. Oh, the tragic turns you take. For little did I know then just how far my novel desires would take me, and just how far into the interior I was prepared to go. East 57th Street, New York City, 7:35 p.m. God, when I think of it now, the state of me.
Tell me who is that giant with the gold curly hair? You right at the head of your band.
I'm as drunk as a boiled owl, and a reasonably attentive audience has gathered as I sing a selection of party songs at the top of my lungs. They are soon joined, however, by a certain pot-bellied, middle-aged, cue-ball-headed, coven-born cop by the name of Captain James T. Martin. Far from impressed by my abilities as a ballad singer, he decides to cease my cantata and return the streets of Gotham to normal as quickly as possible.
Citizens of New York, return to your homes.
Your beaver's aloft. And you three.
Come on, you big Fermanabolics.
This, of course, is not the first time that I've been busted by Captain James T. Martin. To be honest, I sometimes think the only reason he keeps taking me in is because he likes talking to a Fermanagh man. Maybe he's lonely. Maybe he misses the general damp of the Ulster atmosphere. Or maybe he's just trying to keep me on the straight and narrow, and God knows I do need minding. But whatever the reason this time, this is a moment when fate truly begins to interfere in the print works of my life.
Hey, come here till I show you something.
Captain Martin leans under his desk and produces a large leather holdall. It doesn't look good. He's going for the thumbscrews, perhaps, or a power drill. And as he walks towards me with the bag under his oxter like a dead black sheep, I don't like the look on his face one bit. He unlocks the cage door, enters, and sits down beside me. I shift away. He moves closer again.
So, wait till you see what I have in here for you.
What happens next leaves me breathless. Captain James T. Martin of the County of Cavan opens the holdall and begins to extract, bit by magical bit, a set of the most beautiful Illan pipes. He looks at me, and I look back at him, both of us understanding the mystery of what is happening.
These pipes were made by the great R.L. O'Mealy of the County of Westmead. Turned the ivory and cured the skin himself. Oh, it'd break your heart.
I have no words. I just gaze at the pipes before me. Not since Liam O'Flynn played with Planksty in the Technical College have I seen a set for real. And as Captain Martin begins to strap them on, my heart begins to pound.
Do you know that Lord Edward Fitzgerald himself, the fifth son of the Duke of Leinster, could pipe the birds out of the trees? A gentleman piper he was. And sporting Captain William Kelly of the Curragh of Kildare, who played for the King of England. And do you know there was a piper called Johnny Cash, a man born in the county of Wexford in 1832?
Of course, I'm starting to get the shakes by now. The overwhelming excitement when, at certain tantalizing moments, Captain Martin quivers his fingers or squeezes some silent air through the bellows. But then, each time, as if to tease, he relaxes again, and leaving us noteless, he begins to talk again. He speaks of Dudley Coltlough, Alderman William Fair, Jeremiah Murphy, Piper Gaynor, James Ganzi, the King of the Kerry Pipers, Kearns Fitzpatrick, Patrick Keneally, Soldier O'Farrell, Old Jemmy Byrne, Patrick R. Bohan, the Hogans of Cashel, Martin O'Reilly, the Blind Piper of Galway, Edward Joyce, Morgan Galway, Nicholas Burke, and Turlough McSweeney, the Donegal Piper.
Captain Martin, I thank you for your tales of the gentlemen pipers and the blind pipers of Kerry and the Hogans of Cashel. But would you not consider playing a tune?
No tunes tonight.
It's just that you have the pipes strapped on and your fingers are hovering over the holes and your elbow is poised upon the bag. I thought it might be just the perfect moment to hear, for example, the Virginia Reel. A tune I've often heard in the sally bushes, in the bulrushes, in the winds, and in the very wind itself.
The moment I say this, the face of Captain Martin freezes and he drops the chanter from his fingers. He leaps to his feet and gazes at me with the widest of eyes, the pipes hanging limp by his side like a recently deceased octopus.
You say you have heard the music in the wind, in the sally bushes and the winds.
I do hear it regular.
And do you know, do you appreciate, do you understand what it is you're hearing?
I do. The music of the she. Fairy music. Sure, what else would it be?
Captain Martin rubs his eyes and his temples, and he cracks his knuckles and he stretches his arms, all the time sighing and gasping and smiling and saying,
"Oh, man, dear."
Finally, he leans in so close that I'm hit by a sudden gust of pastrami and mustard.
Tell me this. And think very carefully before you answer me. Have you ever heard the sound of the she here in New York City?
Regular.
Oh, don't mess around now. I mean here in New York, not in Ireland, mind. Here, in the metropolitan area.
Up in Central Park every Friday night. I sit on a low mound behind a rhododendron bush and... oh, I hear tunes like I've never heard before, and all of it played on the sweetest of pipes.
Oh, no, pardon me for asking, but do you be drunk when you hear this?
Betimes.
So you do be drunk?
And now and again, yes. There would be a drink taken.
All right, well, no matter. You must take me to the very spot.
I'll take you there, surely. This Friday coming. But...
but what?
There's one condition.
What is it?
That you teach me how to play them pipes.
Oh... right. Well, I suppose I could. But I have to tell you, it takes a lifetime to learn the pipes.
I'd give anything to play them. I'd sell my soul to play them.
Ah, now. Don't be saying things like that.
But it's true. I would.
I am so delighted with my pipe lesson arrangement with Captain Martin that I go on what you might call the lash. I have little memory of it. The meatpacking district was part of it, certainly, and the East Village, Mott Street Noodles at some point or another. And finally, and don't ask me how I got there, for I wouldn't be fit to tell you, the Metropolitan Museum of Art.
In the Scorpions and Flames and Wexford is one, and a barrow tomorrow we'll cross.
I'm as full as a bingo bus, and I mistakenly believe myself to be in the National Gallery of Ireland in Merrion Square. So the scene is a somewhat confused one when, without warning, I suddenly bulk all over Joseph Haverty's blind piper, and security is called. The blind piper has always been my favourite painting. A man, blind, wearing possibly only the one sock, is playing on a set of illan pipes, and he appears to sit without the aid of a chair or other visible means of support. His companion is a small, sad-faced, barefoot girl who is toasting her toes by a miserable fire, and clearly she knows much more than she is letting on. It's a peculiar picture, neither happy nor sad, and the juxtaposition of the two figures has always been, to my mind, unnerving. The tune being played is, I have long suspected, the wind that shakes the barley. Anyways, a sudden and violent dig in the ribs, followed by a series of sharp elbows from within the very cage itself. It's as if some strange music in 13/8 time is all go in my gut, all juicer and circular saw as the ferocious kidney pain of it doubles me over. I claw in panic at my sides, and I shoot back up again as if yanked by the hair. And then, completely against its will, my jaw suddenly dislocates itself, and out comes a terrific rush of bad air, expelled with such hellish force that out with it comes the mother of all bokes, a ferocious geyser of astonishing mass and density. I am escorted from the building, and there's talk of deportation. Dark forces are gathering. But at this stage, however, I have no earthly idea of just how dark they are going to be.
Huh? What?
I jolt awake to find a man with a razor blade opening a slit in the pocket of my jeans and extracting a chubby fresh roll of 20s. The man looks up at me. His eyes are blue and bitter, and his nose is pitted and greased. I'm afraid to move, but he just grins up at me and concludes the operation, flashing the blade just inches from my eyelids and gently patting the wound in my pocket. And then, the strangest thing. He puts his fingers in his ears and begins to hum. He's like a lizard, his eyes opening and closing. And when he stops humming and opens his mouth, he has a card stuck to his tongue, a card he then flicks onto my lap. It's for an all-day nightclub in Hell's Kitchen called Heaven's Gate. Happy hour, every hour, it says. No dress code, no cover. And then the man is gone like a rat down a hole. I should, of course, have been put on my guard by this incident. Hindsight is a wonderful thing, but young men are foolish. Mad stuff altogether going on in their heads and in their trousers, and in my case, in my bloodstream, so that things don't always register as they should. But at that moment, all I had on my mind was the pipes, and it was time for my lesson. And so, Captain Martin of the NYPD begins to demonstrate various stylistic techniques from the cram to the pop. He explains the difficulties of overblowing in order to reach the upper octave without affecting the deep drone tone of the drones. Hup. and he expresses particular enthusiasm for the free employment of grace notes, decorative notes, before the note or in the middle of the note, or maybe even after the note. Appoggiatura.
You mean the note above the principal note interpolated before it and momentarily taking its place in the rhythm of the passage?
You have it.
Can I have a go now?
Hold on, you.
Your demonstration, Captain Martin, is top drawer, but even so, I want to lash at them myself.
You're nowhere near ready, son. Now come back in the morning and we'll see then.
I have been thrown out of my digs, the usual, I'm afraid, and so I ask if I might sleep for the night in the cells. Captain Martin gives me the keys and leaves, but to my horror, all the cells are taken. In the first is Cosmos, the minuscule barman.
Are you all right there?
In the second is a German tourist, naked but for her yellow Wellingtons.
What's a little cold in here?
In the third is Planksty. In the fourth is the man with the razor blade. In the fifth is Joseph Haverty's blind piper. In the sixth is a big black dog. And in the seventh are 40 badgers all playing away. With big faces on them, playing 40 sets of pipes, and all at once they turn towards me and laugh out loud. Their dog's teeth, their twinkling eyes, their 40 mocking badger laughs. I pull back from the door, and then when I venture to look back in again, they are gone. Vanished. Every one of them. My heart barrels as I enter the cell and begin to look for some trace of what I've seen. Surely the fairy host appearing to me in the form of beasts of the wood. I have heard of their ability to do this, but this is the very first time I have experienced such pistrix at first hand. I am well shook. And what do I find? Lying on the floor, fair gleaming in the light bulb light, is the most beautiful set of union pipes you have ever seen. They have clearly been left for me. They are a gift from the good people. And so, with tenderness, I lift them from the floor and cradle them in my arms. I'm sitting on a bench by the Hudson River, and I'm about to strap on my pipes when a terrible fear comes over me. These badgers. They might not have been the good people at all. They might, in fact, be evil fairies. And if I was to keep these pipes, I might be in the most terrible danger. I might be cursed beyond all recognition if I was to play even the one note. Maybe turned into a badger, or a shitehawk, or a pig. And so, quickly, I release myself from the pipes and fling them as far as I can into the river. When they hit the water, I hear a scream. And it sounds porcine to me.
Right, you. Come with me.
Where are we going?
They're deporting you tomorrow. The Metropolitan Museum has some very powerful connections, and so does the estate of William de Kooning. Yeah, they're not too pleased with you, vomit boy. Now show me where you hear the fairy music.
You said you'd teach me the pipes. You agreed.
No time for that now. Show me the place or I'll take you to the airport myself. And you're sure this is it?
This is it, yes. Now give me them pipes.
I shouldn't be doing this, but...
Give me them.
They feel both delicate and strong. They have life in them, and with great solemnity I begin to buckle buckles and slide my arm into the leather strap of the bellows. The regulators and drones lie across my legs, and the bag nestles under my oxner.
See, If you were lying to me...
Cuinnis. Captain Martin Cuinnis.
I take the chanter of ebony in my trembling fingers, and I begin. Not the best, but I keep at it. And all of a sudden, out comes the most melodious sound. A long, unending low note that might have lasted forever. But for what happens next? A huge swirl of dust and leaves spirals all about us, and a moth-jeweled shaft of light shoots from the bush at an angle of 45 degrees. Immediately I stop squeezing with my elbow, for it is clear that it is my own virginal note which is provoking the maelstrom from the earth. Squinting deep into the bush, I see only dust and leaves and bright light and beetles and bugs and ants and worms all swirling within it. But then, as I look down at my fingers, I see that they too are moving, lightly and with delicacy and decorum. And as the music grows louder, I realize that the one who is producing it is me.
Cripes, would you play in the... Cripes, would you play in the pipes?
But it's not me.
Oh, don't knock it, son. I'll keep her lit.
Am I talking hours here or moments? I cannot tell. The music gets faster and faster. Time's architecture crumbles and the tunes keep coming one after another. Neither myself nor Captain Martin know the names of any of them, and we can only assume that they are all fairy tunes, ancient and unknown to any man. My fingers can move no more, and I slump over the exhausted instrument. And then I look towards the rhododendron bush, and I see the whirl of leaves and dust and small ground-dwelling creatures start to subside. And that's when I see, standing before me, a woman, tall and slender, her face the color of apple blossom. Her hair in golden ringlets falls about her shoulders, and a band of gold curves about her brow. Her eyes are as green as gemstones, and her lips are red as Connemara fuchsia. The robe she wears, embroidered with the most delicate threads of silver and gold, is made from the finest nipple-caressing silk. She is the most beautiful woman I have ever seen.
You are the most beautiful woman I've ever seen.
Nieves Anam Dom, my name is Nieves. Anam Dom, my name is Nieves. Je m'appelle Nieves.
Of the golden hair.
There is no proper word for yes in the old tongue.
Oh, wow. Nieves, of the golden hair, Nieves.
Oh, cripes.
The pipes.
Le pipi.
The pipes.
Le pipi.
Le pipe.
I can't explain it. Never played them before in my life.
Le dinima. The fairies. Les fées.
Oh, Nieves of the golden hair, I think I love you more than my own life.
Kintje, I'm not surprised. Bien sûr.
I'm serious.
Maris drushor. You're as horny as a three-ball tomcat. Tu es un chaud lapin.
But might you not love me for all that?
Vader, perhaps. C'est possible.
Really? Do you think?
Sloan, farewell. A bientôt.
And so, in the depths of the deepest imaginable love wallop, I walk down 7th Avenue. Captain Martin, beside me, is up to high dough.
Sometimes the fairies give the music to some chosen one, but only for a brief period. You do have to prove yourself worthy to receive it in full. Niamh of the Golden Hair has offered you the music so that you will reform yourself. Give up your low-down ways and be worthy of the music, and perhaps even of Niamh herself. Oh, this is serious stuff, son.
Well, that's what she said anyway.
Look, you'll have to go home. Sort yourself out. And then, and only then, when you're ready, you must seek her out. But listen to me. Make sure you've got yourself right before ever you do. You've only got one shot at this. You never get a second chance with a fairy.
But seriously, do you really think she would ever... I mean, consider me.
Why, stranger things have happened in your meanderings. Now, you be sure to go straight home tonight. Stay off the sauce. You are being deported in the morning. Get a good night's sleep.
I will, I promise.
Now, don't do anything stupid.
No fear of that. I'm going straight home to me bed.
And of course, what did I do? Only not go home to my bed. Not a bit of me. And what do I do? Only fall right into the pit. Stupid, stupid, stupid boy. And I was warned. All the signs were there, but no effect on me. I had to go, didn't I? Egypt, no talking to me. And now I'm in the very last place I should be. Heaven's Gate, all-day nightclub, Hell's Kitchen, New York City. It's 3:30 in the morning, and what am I at? Dancing all by myself to Donna Summer's I Feel Love, the 12-inch. And then what happens? Only a long, bony hand, wouldn't you know? Just a light's on my shoulder, and I turn to see a tall, middle-aged man with a bald head, ridged and gleaming with perspiration. He has cheekbones of titanium, an aquiline nose, and the soulless eyes of a great white shark. He has a ring on every finger. Assorted necklaces, chains, and charms dangle inside a long black coat, the collar upturned and velvet. On his feet are extremely misshapen cowboy boots, made from what looks like snakeskin. Oh, why did I go to that place? Why?
Rather noisy in here, isn't it? I always think myself that silence is much sexier, far more conducive.
Shh! And with his claw of a hand now on my arm, the man escorts me to a table reserved for two, a bottle of Brut Reserve already angled in an ice bucket.
Champagne for my real friends, real pain for my...
He sticks his forefinger in the champagne, stirs it around, and then withdraws it with a leer.
In anima mater, agerson vic, agerson spirit nave.
Amen!
And then his eyes narrow and he leans right into me. He reeks of sulfur and mouthwash.
Do you know who I am?
Do you work for a record company?
Actually, the record companies work for me. For I am the father of lies. The old gentleman, the beast, the serpent, old scratch, the prince of darkness, the angel of the bottomless pit.
And then he starts nodding warmly to people nearby, famous actors and rock stars mostly, and the odd Dublin socialite with no specific talent that you might put your finger on, in New York for the weekend. Shopping. And he sends outrageous rounds of drink to their tables.
Thank you, you're very good.
So what are you saying then? That you're the devil?
The man locks his hands together as if in prayer, and twists a terrible crack at his neck. I can tell that he's working up to something now. His colorless eyes are suddenly bloodshot, and he begins to scrutinize me in earnest. And then his nose starts to bleed, a scarlet rivulet rolling to his lips and onto his slithering tongue.
Actually, I'm quite fond of the pipes myself. An instrument with tremendous possibilities. The chanter, bellows and bag, the regulators and the keys. It's just so damn complicated. And the music itself, so very perverse.
Have you heard of the man they call O'Flynn?
Willie Flynn. I can do nothing with him. Did you ever see such an immovable object?
Well, Liam Og is my man.
I know Willie Flynn, and you are no Willie Flynn.
So what do you want?
The very texture of the man's skin seems to harden.
I'm quite capable of being a reasonable man. In fact, I prefer to do things properly, if at all possible. And so I propose that a contract is immediately drawn up, in the customary manner, and that you undertake to exchange one soul, the property of yourself, for one item of recompense, which happens to be in my gift. It's a very straightforward arrangement. I get your soul, and you get a little something from me. Fair exchange is no robbery.
I'm not sure I follow.
What if I told you, for instance, that I could give you the finest set of pipes ever made, and that you could squeeze from them the greatest music ever heard, that you would be the greatest piper ever to pipe, better than Mr. O'Farrell? Better than Martin O'Reilly, the blind piper of Galway. Whoa! Better than, say, Liam Og O'Flynn.
Yes! Below the belt, indeed. When he says those words, it's as if the soul is sucked out of me. I cannot speak. I splutter. I flutter, and I retire to the men's toilets to reassemble my thoughts. When I return, the devil, for I know that it is him, is bathed in the light of an overhead spot. His skin is cold and blue. His eyes are flashing red and green like broken traffic lights. He is bleeding from both nostrils now.
I have considered your offer, but for all its glitter, it would not entice me to part with my eternal soul.
Ah, but he's not finished. Isn't that right, Pipe Boy?
Well, I was just thinking that if you really do wish to make a deal with me, then perhaps we might come to some slightly different arrangement. To the one proposed, that is. A deal on my terms rather than yours.
This is most irregular. But for the sake of argument, what do you have in mind?
I form my words with care. There can be no room for misunderstanding here, not in a transaction like this one, and given the parties concerned.
To be able to play the pipes better than Liam O'Flynn is certainly tempting. Of course it is. But if you were to have my soul, then you must go just a little further.
Go on.
I want to be him.
Let him speak.
That's what I want. I want to be him. I want to be Liam O'Flynn. I want to actually become him. I want to play, look, walk, talk, and breathe like him. And if I can become Liam Og O'Flynn in the flesh, then yes, you can have my eternal soul and all belonging to it.
The devil holds out his hand, his eyes now a blazing red as rivers of drool cascade from between his blackened teeth. The drills of his skull are sleek with floods of champagne sweat, and I am filled with a terrific excitement, and he spits efficiently on the palm of his hand. I spit rather more sloppily on mine, and then we shake. My metamorphosis is sudden, painful. painful and brief. My whole body convulses, and a terrible shivering claws through me as I twist and contort as if in a warp spasm. The next thing I know, I'm gazing down at my two new piper's hands, the very hands of Liam O'Flynn. The devil nods and smiles, and, seized by a panic, I run from the club and find myself in the middle of Dublin City on what looks very much like Grafton Street. I run to my reflection in the window of Brown Thomas, and there, to my astonishment, is the noble countenance of the ace and deuce of pipers. I am Liam O'Flynn. I am the O'Flynn. From a call box in the Shelburne Hotel, I ring Christy and we talk for hours. For an entire year, I toured the world as Liam O'Flynn. Perhaps you've seen me perform. That night in the Duke of York with Artie McLean, that was me. That big night in the National Concert Hall with the 17 ovations, that was me too. In fact, any time you think you may have seen Liam O'Flynn around then, it was, in fact, me. And boy, was I living the life. London, Berlin, Paris, Milltown, Malbay. It was incredible. Carnegie Hall everywhere.
Meine Damen und Herren, Liam O'Flynn.
Ladies and gentlemen, Liam O'Flynn.
And when I think of it now, and of course what happened to the former Liam O'Flynn is unthinkable, I can only assume that he became me in a straight swap. It must have been a terrible trauma for him to suddenly find himself with talentless fingers and a less than noble countenance, but there it is. Awful. I know there were reports of me doing all kinds of things. Apparently, I boked in Bob Dylan's porter cabin at Slane Castle, but, needless to say, I was nowhere near the place. I was on stage that very night in Stuttgart, Germany, performing the Brendan Voyage with full orchestra. But that was the way of it then. I knew what I had done was wrong, and I knew that I had wronged the piper greatly, but I was on a roll. I was Liam O'Flynn. I was the master piper. I was in demand all over the planet. Front of the plane every time, the best hotels, and me playing every tune in the world on the doodle sack. No, looking back, I was the ace and deuce. I was the cat's pajamas. But then, of course, a year later, the devil came back. Mary of Dunloe Festival, Dunloe, County Donegal, Ireland, 3:54 p.m. It's a low-key gig on the back of a lorry. I am accompanied by a violinist, a guitarist, and a large man in cattle dealer boots who rolls out the odd song. And although the position of the lorry in the main street is less than suitable, the show is going well. We are right in the middle of a set of nameless tunes when I lift my eyes from the space immediately beyond my knees. And there he is, looking right at me with a big face on him. He's back. The Prince of Darkness. The Father of Lies. The Angel of the Bottomless Pit. Amid the crowd of mammies and daddies and poke-eating children, there he is, the devil himself, still wearing the black coat with the velvet collar, his shark's eyes fixed on me as he takes up an intimidating position right at my feet. He listens intently, letting out the odd gulder and whelp at moments of modulation. He never for a moment takes his eyes off me, and my playing suffers greatly as a result. When the show is over and people begin to straggle off to chip shops and slot machines, I turn and begin to pack away the pipes. I pray that when I look up again, he will be gone. But this is not to be, and soon his awful bony hand rests once more upon my shoulder.
Grand performance, Liam. The snowy-breasted pearl. Love that.
A terrible damp sweat breaks on the back of my neck, and an empty sickness floats in my gut.
It's time.
No, no, I'm saying. I'm at in the middle of a tour. They're expecting us in Glenties.
Come on now, Liam. We made a deal, and your time is up. I could have let things run for a few more years, but sure you'd only enjoy yourself too much. I've a bit coming up, too, that you might be interested in. In fact, I'm thinking of putting Planxty back together sometime around 2004.
No, please, no. I'm pleading with him now. Please let me be Liam for that. Planxty!
Yes, Vicar Street. A couple of nights.
Please, please. I have the devil by the velvet collar now. The good ship Kangaroo. I can play it in my sleep. Please!
Sorry, time's up.
I beg and beg, but he just smiles at me, his nose bleeding again, and he musters up once more his grotesque magic. And I know the cause is lost. I know the time has come, and I feel this terrible shivering inside me. And then, right there on the back of a lorry on the main street in Dunloe, with all those people watching, I begin to shudder and contort as slowly and painfully I regain my old, undignified, ignoble and talentless shape and become myself again. It's horrible. I look at my hands, the fingers that can't play for toffee, and I feel that old, familiar welling boke. And just like that day in front of Joseph Haverty's blind piper in the Metropolitan Museum of Art, I feel a sudden dig in the ribs, and then another one still. And I clutch at my sides, and I see that the devil's blazing eyes are laughing madly at me. But what happens next is the true horror. When I open my mouth once more to spew forth some vomitous manifestation of pure evil, out comes nothing at all. I look to the devil, and again, nothing, just the terrible silence of the dry boke. My face twists, my mouth gapes, every sinew in my neck strains, and every organ in my body seems about to explode. And yet, nothing. But then, after a few moments of holding this awful lock-jawed mug, suddenly, from the back of my throat, there comes a noise. Another dig in the ribs, and another noise. And it is the noise of the illen pipes. A dark and horrible note comes spurting from my mouth. And then more notes, until finally a whole tune. And all the time my ribs are being punched and kicked and the air is flying up out of me and this class of hellish hornpipe is coming like a host of demons from my ears, nose and throat.
A minute ago you were the piper, now you were the pipes. I love it. You're the very devil's instrument. Well done, me.
Please. 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 And so, now I can tell you the whole of it. The terrible truth is that I am now no longer myself, nor am I Liam O'Flynn. What I am, in fact, is a set of union or illan pipes, here to be played upon by the devil himself. He keeps me trapped under a large erratic on the Atlantic coast, and whenever he takes the notion, he takes me out, shoves me up under his oxter, and spreads my limbs across his lap. I hang there like a limp rag doll, and he squeezes and thumps and pokes and prods the living daylights out of me. He plays awful, shocking, out-of-tune lamentations, which I boke up out of my tortured throat, and he laughs away to himself. And sometimes, for sheer badness, he holds my nose when he's doing it. So if, of an evening, you're walking along the Donegal coast and you happen to hear the hellish sound of illan pipes in the wind, think of me, for it is not the sound of the Sidhe or of Radio na Gaeltachta coming from a car stereo. It is the sound of this lost and pitiable soul, a set of pipes played upon by the devil himself. And take warning now by me. Take care yourselves to avoid the 12 pints of stout at the one sitting, and any tourist you might subsequently meet in the wrong convenience. Take care also never to fall for fairy women or attend Dublin nightclubs. Stay sober on the broad sidewalks of New York. Never take musical instruments not belonging to you, and never, ever get obsessed with the gentlemen pipers. Above all, never, ever, ever make a deal with a man in a long black coat with a velvet collar, and always, always be extremely careful where you boke. It could all come back in your face.
That was The Pipes by John Kelly, with original recordings by Liam O'Flynn. The narrator was Barry McGovern, and Connor McNeil played the narrator as a young man. Captain James T. Martin was played by Steve Blount, and Kathy Rose O'Brien played Niamh of the Golden Hair. Michael McElhattan played the Devil. Joe Taylor played Cosmas the Minuscule Barman and the Robber. And Kirsten Aquaviva played the German Tourist. Additional recordings were by Tig O'Reilly. Sound supervision was by Mark McGrath, Richard McCullough and Anton Timoney. And the dramaturg was Jesper Bergman. Special thanks to Micheál O'Reilly, Terry Moylan and Napeabri Ilin. The Pipes by John Kelly with original recordings by Liam O'Flynn was produced by Kevin Brew. And the series producer of RTÉ Radio Drama is Kevin Reynolds.